Hello and welcome to the D.
An A of Home Interiors, the podcast which is all about empowering you to make confident interior and furnishing decisions for your home. I'm Audrey, founder of Audrey Whelan Interior Design.
And I'm Deirdre, founder of youfurnish.com, search 100 plus furniture retailers on one website. The DNA of Home Interiors is proudly sponsored by checkatrade.com. If you need help with your next home improvement project, you can search from over 39,000 recommended, vetted, and monitored trades on checkatrade.com. So today we are speaking to Jane Middlehurst. Jane is running an online platform that offers online courses for homeowners to learn how to renovate better. Jane, really keen to learn about your background and how you came to set up Home Notes.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. So Home Notes is myself and my business partner, Amy Poulsen. And the kind of history is that we had an architecture practice together. So we've been, you know, we set that up about 10 years ago. So we've been renovating homes and working to do residential projects for the last 10 years. And we kind of came to the point where we realized that our clients needed quite a lot of support to take them through the project. And when you're working on, you know, projects with quite tight budgets and at the lower end of the budget scale, which is what we were doing, there isn't enough time within the project itself to kind of get all of that information over to them so that they can be a great client and understand what's happening and make the right decisions for their projects. So we kind of thought, what would it be like if all of this information was in a central place where everybody had access to all the information that they needed at different stages in the project, and just make that whole process a lot more efficient. And so that's how we came up with the idea of Home Notes, to kind of, you know, give clients that support that they need, because I think we often underestimate their role in the project, and actually they're in an amazing position to kind of put their effort into renovation projects. So we're helping them do that.
And so Jane, like for anybody listening to this who has carried out a home renovation project, they will no doubt be fully aware of all these challenges that people face. But say for somebody listening who hasn't actually embarked on a home renovation project, or is maybe considering one, or has just bought a property and knows that they need to face into one, what would you say are the biggest problems that people tend to come up against?
Well, there's a few different problems. I guess the one that everybody thinks about is budgets, because quite a lot of the time, people aren't necessarily understanding the full scope of their budget, like everything that's included. And we can kind of focus in on, you know, a price from a contractor or, you know, a part of the budget. And I think that's really interesting for people to kind of face their budgets earlier on in the project and map that all out so that they know they're covering all aspects of their project rather than just one particular section. But I think the other real problem that people have is actually finding the right team and the right support that they need to get the project that they want, because obviously not all projects are the same, that, you know, not everybody wants to achieve the same thing from a home renovation. And actually there's, you know, finding the right people to put together to help you get there is a bit like a puzzle. You know, there's lots of different ways that you can do it. There's not one set way. So it's really about kind of helping people work out who are the best people that are going to help them get the project that they want for the budget they have. And that's, you know, that is tricky. And sometimes we speak to people further down the line that perhaps hadn't chosen the right setup and then have problems further down the line.
And so Jane, would you say then that these courses that you offer are like solely for people kind of managing their own renovation or extension projects? Or would you say that they are still relevant for somebody who might have a project manager or be considering, you know, having somebody like that on board?
Yeah, it's really interesting, actually, because I think when we started out, we were actually imagining that this was for people working with professional team. You know, we wanted to, you know, in kind of help people work out exactly what was happening whilst working with professionals. And I think the more that we've continued with it, the more we're realizing that there's lots of people self-project managing projects. So actually we've come at it the other way around, where we were giving people, I think, just that idea that being a client, even if you're not taking on any of the responsibility of the project itself, is already such a big job. You know, there's already such a lot to do. And then obviously, if you take into account the fact that people are then going to be project managing on top of that, then there's so much more, you know. So we're kind of now catering for, you know, people, whether they have professionals with them or whether they're doing it on their own. We've actually had quite a lot of feedback from architects and other professionals that have fed back to us after having received a client that's been through the Home Notes process. And they were just saying how great it is, because it really takes the pressure off them, because they're receiving clients that know what should be happening when, they understand the process, they understand how to deliver the information that they want, they're really clear on their project priorities and what they want to get out of the project. So it just means that you can start having conversations about the design, about what you want to achieve, rather than using your time with your professional to chat about the logistics, you know, because all of that can use up all your precious time. And actually, you can focus then on just getting the project that you want.
So could you tell us, Jane, a little bit more about the courses? Is there various levels that you progress through? What's the length of time? If I'm a homeowner and I'm planning a project, how soon should I be starting these in advance of when I'm looking to maybe hire an architect?
Yeah, we've got two courses at the moment, which are right at the very, very beginning. So that's getting started. And we've just releasing one right now, which is for preparing to go to site with your contractor. And then we have kind of a membership that follows on that fills in all the gaps in between. So I would say for the people who are at the beginning, you know, at the start of their journey, it's never too soon to start preparing for your project, because I think we see people that are, you know, a year ahead of even hiring a professional. And just what I think is often missing in projects is all that preparation time at the beginning, getting your own thoughts straight, you know, really digging down into, you know, what you want to achieve. If you're working with someone else, like comparing what you both think are going to happen and both aligning yourself on the project that you want to create, and then having a really good time to kind of work into your budget, think about the different professionals you want to hire, and interrogate all those options before taking the leap. Because I think people quite often, they've heard somebody use somebody and they just kind of jump straight into that before doing any of that background work. And that background work, it really simplifies the rest of the project. You know, once you've got all that sorted and you know what your priorities are, the rest of the journey is going to be so much simpler. So I would say as soon as you can with the beginning bit. But actually, in terms of taking the course, you know, we sometimes run it as a live event, which happens over 4 weeks, which is generally enough time for people to have a masterclass, do their homework, have another one. You know, you could do it as short as that, or, you know, as long as you want. Yeah, but the idea is, you know, following on from our first course, we have a membership that you can carry on learning with, and there you can access information for, you know, party walls. If you need to know more about structural engineering, you know, you can kind of dip into the content as and when you need it. The idea is to have cover for the whole process.
I really love that idea, Jane, because actually some of my previous colleagues, they were doing their own projects and were always amused me is that they'd come into the office really stressed and they were like, well, we have to decide what light switches and where we want them, or we have to decide on our kitchen. They're like, we thought we had loads of time. And all of a sudden, actually, all these decisions needed to be made much earlier in the project because they hadn't just thought about it. And why would you think about it if you've never done it before? So I can really see, I suppose you cover all of that on the course, do you?
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, just in talking with people through the process of kind of speaking with all the people we deal with through Home Notes, it's really become apparent that there's kind of two main types of project. There's the type of project where you are planning ahead and you're kind of agreeing and sorting and drawing and pricing everything before you get to site. And that's the traditional way that, you know, architects and interior designers work, is that they like to choose everything ahead of time. And when you get to site, everything's agreed. You know, there's kind of course, there are decisions to make, but you're not starting from scratch at that point. But I think there's another kind of whole project structure, which is you are with the, you have a basic idea of the plans that you're going to create, and then you get your contractor. And then it's kind of like a bit of a runaway train where you're quickly choosing all those things as and when your contractor says, yeah, now you need to choose the lights, now you need to have your kitchen here. And, you know, in terms of the project length and the amount of work that goes into it, it's the same, really. It's just you're doing the work in a different order.
And it sounds like a lot less pressure, therefore, coming at it, because the worst thing is that, oh my God, I need to choose the kitchen by Monday, and now we're going to have to spend all weekend going around looking for a kitchen, and this is so stressful, and it's a big purchase. And yeah, I would advocate the first one, just from hearing the stories of colleagues. So super interesting.
And things out of stock as well. I mean, I've seen people do the second approach, and then they're like, right, they have chosen the tiles or whatever it is, but then they find out that, you know, the lead time on them is like 8 weeks or something. And of course, you know, they need them pronto. So that's the thing I'm always saying to people as well. Like, you just, you end up with less choice then, don't you? Or sort of having to make a decision.
It's a great example, Audrey, because that is something I've never done in project. I wouldn't have thought about it. I just assumed, okay, I'll go out and find my kitchen and it'll just automatically be available, because it's not like there's supply issues in the market.
No, Brexit and everything thrown in. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely needs a bit more advanced planning time. But having said all that, I mean, you know, it's really interesting hearing you say, you know, kind of those two approaches, because I've always found it kind of shocking, like the amount of people who would actually say, I've got a builder lined up like next week, or, you know, and they're going to start. And then you can sense the panic. But I think because often people worry that they won't find a contractor, so if they find one that's available, they'll almost go, right, book them in, let's get on it. But, you know, it's kind of, from an architect's point of view or an interior designer's point of view, I suppose, that desire to plan ahead, it definitely feels like it's introducing too much stress into the process.
But I think what's really interesting in terms of that person who's got the contract and who's, you know, hitting site, I think the things with home notes is that we're kind of giving people all the information, you know, like letting people know about lead times, letting people know about how the process works. And so that it's understanding, kind of weighing up all those different things together. You know, maybe there is a person who needs the space quickly, has the contractor lined up, like actually isn't too precious about exactly where the lights go and exactly how this, you know, meets that. And, you know, that might be the best way for them to do that project, and that's totally valid. I think it's more about understanding all the different methods and choosing the one that actually is going to fit you, rather than arriving in that situation and then being like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize, you know, that this was going to be like this, or that I wouldn't be able to kind of have the time to plan everything out. So it's all about kind of making the right choices, really.
Yeah, that's really fascinating, because I suppose it does come down to personality type probably as well, isn't it? Where some people are probably better equipped to deal with the kind of quick on the, you know, what's the expression, off the cuff or on the hoof or whatever. Yeah. And then other people are much more comfortable with sort of, being able to take time over decisions, but, work on the planning side more.
So Jane, how are people finding out about home notes? Because you've mentioned that a lot of architects have fed back about how smooth the process has been. Are you finding that you're getting a lot of referrals now from these architects?
Yes, we do. We do get referrals from architects, because I think, you know, the situation that people find themselves in is that they might be approaching architects, but maybe their brief isn't really aligned with their budget. And so quite often for architects, they find that they have to, you know, turn away people because that person and that project just isn't ready to proceed at that point. Because I think those two things really need to be aligned for the architect to know how to progress that project. So quite often, you know, they can, it's not like they're turning them away forever. They can say, go and do this home notes course, you know, work out kind of what your budget is, what your plan is, and then come back to us. And then we can kind of take it forward. So I think it is just being able to do that. I guess it's in, you know, in a professional terms, it's like stage zero preparation before then arriving to the architect.
So I'm sure it's all covered within the online course, Jane, but can you give us some top maybe three tips around somebody who's out there about to engage in the process of finding an architect? How should somebody think about choosing the perfect architect for them and their project?
Okay, so, you know, clearly there are lots of different architects providing lots of not only different services, different aesthetics, and different types of projects, some more technically advanced and some more simplistic in how they kind of put their details together. And I think the first thing you have to kind of investigate for yourself is what type of project you're looking to make, how important those technical details are to you, the aesthetic that you want to create, I guess how much effort you want to put into the project. So in terms of the different architects providing different services, some will be quite light touch and some will hold your hand through the whole process. So I think the first stage is to work out all of those things for yourself to kind of set your agenda. And then after that point, you're going to be in a much better position to look and find and ask the right questions to find the architect that's going to fit your needs. Obviously, we can do the visual thing quite easily by looking at somebody's website, but the services, you've got to dig a lot deeper in terms of interviewing architects to find out exactly what services they're going to provide to make sure that they're going to give you the support that you want for the whole of your project. Because quite often people get surprised that maybe they get to site and their architect doesn't provide that service for helping them through site. So that's just one example, but knowing the right questions to ask will help you clarify who's right for you.
And you must have some good stories or heard some good stories from fellow architects or indeed clients who got it wrong. What's the most common, I suppose, falling out or where it goes wrong with projects? Where's the disalignment come from?
I do think the biggest problem is, yeah, like you say, it's a misalignment, and it's a misalignment in the team usually. So it's either that the architect services of what they're providing doesn't match what the kind of homeowner thought that they were going to receive. That is a, that is a major problem. And I guess that either turns out as they got an architect that has designed them something too expensive because it's not, they didn't actually want all of the design work that went into that, or that they're left at the other end, that they don't have the support that they need, and actually their architect has provided a lesser service than they imagined, and they have to pick up, you know, where that architect has left off, which can be quite stressful. But then also the same thing can happen with your contractor. So your contractor has to be aligned to the type of project that you want to achieve. And that goes the same way. So the type of work that they do, not every contractor is right for every type of project. And so, yeah, misalignment within the team is probably the biggest issue that we see.
And so, Jane, when you were saying earlier about, like, as part of the course, you kind of help people think through what kinds of people they would be best working with for the type of project that they want to carry out, you know, do you actually suggest certain tradespeople, or is it not that way? It's just a guide for them to then sort of make contact with people individually and assess.
Yeah, so we kind of give people routes of where to look for people. We don't make specific recommendations ourselves. So we give them places to find people, and then the questions to ask and how to kind of get to the root of whether that person's going to be right for them. Because obviously, you know, the UK is a you know, it's a big place, and how they're going to, we can't be kind of in every single area knowing, you know, knowing the landscape there, but we can give people the tools to do that work for themselves.
Mm, yeah. And it's interesting what you said as well about, you know, kind of sometimes people get a recommendation maybe, or they just jump straight in. And like, this is something I've seen a lot where, you know, even people will say to me, oh, do you have, you know, a builder you can recommend or a decorator? And I'll think, oh, there's so-and-so who I've used, but I've had to kind of manage the hell out of them to make sure it's okay, but they're a good price and I'm okay doing that. And I'm looking at this person thinking, I'm not sure they're going to be up for that. So like, yeah. It, like, recommending somebody, it's not as easy as it sounds, is it? Because again, it's probably back to that personality type of what your tolerance levels are. Do they need to clean up at the end of every single day so you can feel in control again? Or is that not important to you? So I suppose, yeah, people do have to kind of take the responsibility on, really, don't they? Of sort of trying to find the person who aligns with them the most.
It is a little bit like dating, isn't it? You know, you can kind of, I guess it's nice to recommend somebody because it's nice for people to know where individual weaknesses are. So if, you know, you can be honest, and that's why kind of references and going to see past projects of both architects and contractors is really good, because those people will be able to say, like, yes, like, ultimately I was happy with the work, but this person struggles with this, this, or this, you know, because everybody has their weak spots. And if you know them ahead, you know, that's, you can kind of go into that with open eyes and kind of think, how can I help that contractor in this area in which they're struggling? And it really is a team effort. I think that's what kind of our main kind of takeaway to give people is, as a client, you are part of the team, and it's, you know, nobody's perfect, and it's how you can kind of meet them in the middle and kind of get this project to the finish line together.
I really love that. I think it's like, if you're bringing somebody on board and you're doing interviews, you're always checking a reference to see, as their manager, how best to manage them. And of course, none of us are perfect either. So, you know, from the architect's point of view, maybe, you know, where have clients annoyed you? Or let me know if I am annoying you and I can change my approach. But the worst thing is that you break down the communication and you stop talking and the frustration builds up on each side. So I think it is, dating is a good analogy, Jane. I like that one.
Quick shout out for our sponsor, checkatrade.com. Search recommended tradespeople online at checkatrade.com.
So have you any tips, Jane, around, obviously it's quite a stressful thing to go through. It's a big project and most people maybe only do it once in their life. So what would you recommend for keeping calm during the process?
Yeah, it is quite a stressful process. I think one of the biggest things to staying calm is to, again, I keep going back to this, but the idea that you've set really clearly in your mind what you want to get out of the project and what your priorities are. Because, you know, we often talk about, you know, you've probably heard this from project management, but the iron triangle, you know, the time, quality, cost triangle. And we ask people to think about their projects and the decisions that they're making in terms of those priorities, because every client wants all three. They want it quickly, good quality, and for a low budget. But we all know that that isn't achievable. So if you can kind of think about what it is that you want to get out of the project, whether it's a really high quality finish or whether actually you just need some extra space and, you know, time is really the most important thing to you. Having that set in your own mind can kind of help you deal with all the decisions that happen on site. Because if you think about site, you know, the thing that people kind of say they're most surprised about is just how many decisions are being fired, you know, how many questions are being fired at you as a client every day. And you get decision fatigue and you kind of feel like you're losing your way and you don't know what the right answers are anymore. And I think if you've done that work before, you can kind of fall back on that to know that you're keeping your decisions aligned with what you wanted to achieve. Because I think it's really easy to get sidetracked to kind of think, oh, actually, you know, maybe I do want, you know, the marble worktop, and why didn't I select this thing? And, you know, that can lead to panic. And I think that can be really tiring. So, yeah, to do that work before is really helpful. Yeah.
Now, speaking of the time, quality, cost triangle, I haven't heard of that, but I imagine it's very logical. It makes sense. As you said, people might want the marble worktop, but of course, there's surprises that come along during the project, and maybe your cost or your budget is getting stretched. How do you maybe help people? Is there any tips that you could give around what decisions can you make that maybe are easy to go back in time when you've got more money and more budget again? Where can you sort of find compromise? Because often it's a case that you can't have everything that maybe you want right now.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Compromise is a big thing. And I think it's encouraging people to see the work that they've done to make the vision for what they want to achieve and the things that they've selected for their projects. If you have a fixed budget, which, let's face it, most people do, and that budget isn't flexible, that it can't just accept the extra charges or the extra things, you know, the unforeseen costs that they were expecting, we have to keep it in our minds that our scope and what we want to achieve is flexible. Because if we have a fixed budget, something has to give. And I think it's a little bit about setting your mind frame to approaching the project in the right way. Because I feel this, once people have made, you know, decisions about certain things like a marble worktop, it's very, you know, they become set in stone and it's very hard to be flexible. So we're just encouraging people to kind of really understand that these things have to be flexible and there have to be changes that are made, and not to kind of hold on to things too tightly. Because if they want to get the budget that is fixed, something has to give. But that's a mentality, and that's something that you can have in your project right from the get-go. And if you do have that in mind when you're on site, that's where it helps you out, and you can kind of feel less aggrieved at having to make those difficult decisions.
So if you want marble, maybe don't be entirely set in stone for what you want. No pun intended.
Yes.
But yeah, that's the the budget is like almost, it's a set of moving parts, isn't it? That, yeah, you need to keep a bit fluid unless there's extra that you can put in. But yeah, it's that's definitely a big challenge. But yeah, the thinking ahead probably helps a bit on that front as well, doesn't it? Kind of investigating some options beforehand, so you're not completely overwhelmed then, you know, with the indecision kind of at short notice at the time.
Having a backup option is always good, and especially if you know that you've chosen something that's at the top of your budget, having another thing in your back pocket that, you know, would do as well, fits with the aesthetic, kind of fits with what you want. For those major items, it's nice to keep those things in play. Obviously, by the time you get to the moment, you can't keep them in play forever because decisions have to be made. But I think it's definitely until the prices come back from your contractor, things, you know, should be viewed as a little bit more fluid.
Yeah, I was keen to ask you, Jane, a common thing that I find crops up is that, you know, when people are renovating, or, you know, as part of the renovation, they want to put an extension on the property, that, you know, it's all about size. People are trying to really kind of maximize. And often I find contractors might even, you know, try and sell on this basis as well. Well, if you're going to go out 2 meters, it's not really going to cost more to go 3 meters, you know, but then people are obviously losing garden space. And then they're not necessarily thinking through the internal layout of that space. It's more about, oh, wow, we can get this amount of space. But then, of course, there's other people who haven't got the option maybe to extend. But I just find, you know, do you cover anything around this on the course that kind of helps people really try to maximize the space? Like, I like to think of it as kind of working from the inside out. So rather than kind of setting that back wall, you're actually looking at how to create the space internally and then kind of deciding on, you know, I suppose the most efficient use of space as opposed to just trying to maximize the space in terms of pure, you know, square meterage.
Yeah, no, we're big kind of believers in the same idea that, you know, houses that we're living in generally weren't kind of made for the lifestyles that we're having right now. And so I guess, as you say, the danger could be that you make a big space at the back of your house that you spend all your time in, but actually you've got lots of other rooms and spaces that aren't working as hard as they should for you. And actually they become a little bit redundant in the process. I think in terms of design work, we obviously think that designers are amazing. So interior designers, architects, they're the people there to help you work out what makes the most sense for your home. Because it's all, you know, individual and particular. I think the things that we kind of encourage people to do is try and understand, you know, one, like their budget versus the space that they want to create. I think we've spoken to so many people that have, you know, it's a lot of money, like renovations are expensive. So it's not as if they have, you know, a really small pot of money, but maybe it isn't enough to kind of do the extension, but then make the internal spaces how they would like them. And for a lot of people, actually the most important thing is to have a comfortable home that functions as they need it to and has the kind of fittings and fixtures and looks, you know, the light that they want to have and just generally to be a nice space to be in. And I think quite a lot of people we speak to when we talk about setting these priorities, that actually comes ahead of the additional floor area. And so they can then, when they're set up to go and speak to their designer, they might prioritize the kitchen that they really wanted, the flooring that they really wanted, making the storage better in the hallway, or, you know, they can kind of prioritize those things that are more overlooked and not as obvious to people, but actually are going to be much more rewarding and much better for them when their house is finished than just having this extra space at the back. So we just encourage people to think about the bigger picture in terms of what they're creating.
And I suppose a lot of those ideas are things that are easier to actually incorporate when you're renovating, like some different type of understairs storage, for example, rather than kind of just create this empty shell and then think, well, how do I store my coats and my shoes? And then anything freestanding is kind of really awkward to fit under a staircase.
Yeah, definitely.
I can always remember, so Jane, my dad fitted curtains and blinds, so I used to go out to a lot of houses and even with wall space, so the radiator directly under the window, for example, and, you know, it wasn't really heat efficient if you were going to close it across with the curtains, or, you know, the radiator might be on a different wall, but as a result you'd very little wall space to actually put in the wardrobe or to put in the bed. And it's things like that, that you actually need to nearly imagine yourself in this room if you close your eyes, and how would you actually use it and where will you put your furniture? Because if that radiator is going to be in the way and it means that you've just lost a whole load of wall space, it's a really important decision about where that goes.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's sometimes it's only when people are on site and buying the furniture and things that those thoughts come up. So yeah, by that point it might be too late to get them in the space that they want to be in. And that's a really missed opportunity. And that extra time and perhaps money speaking with somebody to just iron those things out is money well spent, in my opinion.
And Jane, we're coming close to the end of our time together, but I really wanted to ask you, you know, have you seen, maybe this is something also that, you know, is part of your architecture career kind of before Home Notes even, but, you know, have you got any examples of how you've seen people's lives transformed through renovating their homes?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think it's it is a life-changing experience to go through and to create, you know, this space that is good for you and good for your family and good for how you live your lives. You know, I think I've been through the renovation process myself, and I guess I can talk from personal experience, but I think having a home that's comfortable, you know, that is warm, that has a good level of light, that functions in the way that it needs to for my particular family, and we all have our space that we need, you know, that is life-changing, because you do live your life, you know, a lot of it in your house, as we all know now, and how you use those spaces can really affect your day-to-day experience. So yeah, I mean, I think that it's life-changing for so many people to kind of get that upgrade, to have their homes match the way that we live.
And I've got one last question for you as well, Jane. I want to know a bit of gossip. What is the most weird and wonderful story that you could share with us that either you've encountered or a friend of a friend, somebody else, you know, they wanted a room for their parrots. Is there anything that you could share with us there?
I was trying to think of this. I didn't have loads of good examples. I think the thing that kind of comes up for architects is quite often the cat flap and how to get a good cat flap. And I remember thinking in, you know, searches quite often for sexy cat flaps that are going to work well in the design.
Is that the search term, sexy cat flap?
Yeah, I thought there's a real business there for somebody who wants to make a very aesthetically pleasing cat flap. But I think that is, you know, those little details that are very specific for, you know, trying to get a small animal in and out of your extension. I think they're funny. I mean, I've seen some really good solutions for that. But yeah, I think that's the only thing that I could think of. We did manage to put a little cat flap in for one of our clients, and we hid it under a seat.
Ooh,
that's
smart.
That's so funny you say about the cat flap, because actually a few years ago I was designing a home for a family who had a house cat, and they were saying they needed a cat flap, but the cat wasn't to go outside, but they needed somewhere for the litter tray. So in a custom made bench, like dining bench, we actually created a section inside, so it was blocked off from the rest where they could store, like, you know, extra things, and the separate section then had the litter tray in it, and then a cat flap that the cat could go in and out of freely. But that bench got featured on so many kind of random blogs, and like especially in Japan and stuff. And it was one of these, because it was so kind of quirky, the idea that the cat had its own little home. But yeah, that certainly made me think, yeah, there's a real, I think with pets in general, there's so many kind of, you know, probably, you know, scope to kind of think outside the box, for want of a better word, you know, on that whole area.
That sounds brilliant. I like the idea of the cat having its own little room.
Their own private bathroom.
But yeah, yeah. But most cats, it's, yeah, the indoor-outdoor thing, isn't it? And I have seen one before, actually, but again, just an internal one, cut out like a cat's head, like a sort of a cartoon head of a cat. But, you know, it didn't flap. It was just this idea that the cat could pass through like a wooden panel from one room to another. But still the kind of thing that everybody would stop and comment on, you know, just this one little detail. And yeah, really puts a smile on people's faces.
Yeah.
So Jane, it's been absolutely fascinating having you here today chatting with us. Feel like, you know, there's been so many things I've wanted to know about Home Notes, and I feel like I've got a great kind of overview on it now. And so I guess for anybody who's interested in finding out more, then they can go to your website. We'll pop it in our show notes as well, homenotes.co. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Find out more. But yeah, certainly, I think, yeah, seems to solve a lot of the really, really common problems that I've certainly seen people come up against in their home renovation projects. So yeah, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been such a pleasure to be here and chat to you both. I've really enjoyed it.
If you enjoyed our podcast, we would be delighted if you could rate, review, and subscribe on your favourite podcast provider. This will help others who are seeking home and furnishing advice and inspiration discover the DNA of home interiors. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter at the DNA of Home Interiors.
If you are looking for inspiration and help in designing your home interiors, take a look at Audrey Whelan's masterclasses on audreywhelan.com/events. And don't forget to check out youfurnish.com, a search and comparison website which helps connect people with amazing furniture from over 100 retailers. We designed it to solve the problem we and thousands like us faced furnishing our homes. And now we are really excited that everyone can search, discover, compare and shop for their home all in one place.
Thank you to our sponsor checkatrade.com for their support in bringing this episode to you. And most importantly, thank you all for listening today.
We hope you can join us next time.